Republicans started this redistricting war, and Democrats have made clear we're going to finish it. So at the end of the day, it's the voters who get to decide who's in the majority after the November midterm elections, and not Donald Trump. When they go low, we strike back.
Okay, Hakeem Jeffries. We'll see how that goes.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
We shall see.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internet around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome to all our affiliate stations around the country and the world, including WRWK in Richmond, Virginia. Nice job, guys. We'll get to that in a moment. We've got a lot to get to today, including a guest who will be here to discuss what she describes, arguably correctly, as, quote, the greatest data theft in history, and one, by the way, that is still underway with little care by the Trump administration, the one that has done the thieving in this case, and it very well may be your data that has been stolen. So anyway, got a lot to get to. I've got, in fact, two stories to share with you today, but we need to start here today because, frankly, this is the first time in a long time that elected Democrats have managed to actually impress me. Desi Doyen, I'm actually impressed by what they did here. How are you, by the way?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
Earth Day.
Okay.
Just wanted
Thank
to
you.
Get that in.
Yes.
All right. Well, it was an audacious scheme when it first came to light back in October of last year, when Democrats in Virginia first made it known. I recall reporting on it that day as it was just breaking. I think it might have broken while we were on the air. And I remember commenting on it that it was something that Republican lawmakers might do, not Democrats. I was shocked to see them actually playing political hardball this way because Democrats just don't do that. Making it all the more audacious, it was just weeks before the entire House of Delegates in Virginia would be up for election across the state, across the Commonwealth. Democrats announced that in response to Donald Trump's order to his to Republican-controlled states to redraw their U.S. House maps in the middle of the decade, pretty much unheard of, in order to give his party, to give Republicans an advantage in this year's upcoming midterm elections, Democrats, who narrowly controlled the legislature at the time in Virginia, had a plan that they announced to push back against what, for example, lawmakers in Texas had done in responding to Trump's orders. When Texas lawmakers voted to redraw the Lone Star State's already gerrymandered U.S. House map to try and essentially steal five Democratic House seats this coming November, largely seats that are held by minority members, steal them from Democrats on behalf of Republicans, flip them to Republican. Donald Trump demanded it of Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who initially, I think, did not want to do this, did not think it was a good idea, was concerned about doing it and what effect it might have on other districts in the state. But Abbott fell in line, as he does. He then called a special session of the state's legislature to do Trump's bidding. The elected officials, then not the voters, would decide who held those U.S. House seats under Donald J. Trump, under Greg Abbott, and under Republican rule. But in Virginia, they had another idea. The deeply purple state of Virginia, Commonwealth of Virginia, has a constitutional amendment that mandates U.S. House seats be drawn up by an independent bipartisan commission. Lawmakers couldn't just vote to choose their own voters as they could down in Texas. The voters would have to have a say in this in order to change the Commonwealth's constitution to set aside the independent bipartisan commission that draws those U.S. House maps for Virginia, and that they would have to ask the voters to help Democrats pick up as many as four seats in this November's elections by redrawing the maps. And unlike the special election that would be held, this was back in October, so this would be right before the special election that was held a few weeks later here in California on Prop 50 to similarly set aside the House map drawn by an independent commission out here in the Golden State. Unlike that in California, a ballot amendment in Virginia would have to be, it would have to go through a whole bunch more steps in order to get that constitutional amendment onto the ballot in the first place. Here in California, it worked. It worked great. The Prop 50 won by a landslide after it was put onto the ballot by a single vote of the state legislature. Not quite as easy to do in Virginia. In Virginia, both chambers of the legislature must pass such an proposed amendment over two contiguous sessions before it can then finally go onto the ballot to be decided by voters. And remember, when they announced this, this was just weeks before the entire House of Delegates last year. The entire House themselves would be coming before voters in the state's off-year elections last November. Making things more difficult, the legislature was not even in regular session at the time that the Democrats announced they were going to do this. And the state's then Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin, well, he certainly wasn't going to call a special session to allow Democrats to do any of this. Democrats might have been able to call a special session themselves if they had control of two-thirds of both chambers, but they did not. They narrowly controlled the legislature, and yet they had this audacious scheme to hold a vote anyway on this constitutional amendment, which had to be done, by the way, very quickly before a new session would happen after the start of this year with a new House of Delegates that was being voted on in November, which might may or may not be controlled by the Democrats. They didn't know this at the time last year, and in time to get this constitutional amendment before the voters in a special election this year, in time to redraw the U.S. House maps before this year's U.S. House midterm elections. It was a complicated scheme.
Yes.
To say the least. It was audacious, as I noted at the time. And then Democrats played the card in all of this that I thought sounded, when they announced this, I thought it sounded, boy, really Republican-y. Now, not Republican-y in a slimy, authoritarian, tyrannical way, but in a hardball way that we do not usually hear from Democrats. We don't normally see Democrats acting like this, and it was a card that, frankly, I was stunned, if delighted, to see them play. Though the General Assembly was not in regular session at the time, and the Republican governor, who has since been replaced by Democrat Abigail Spanberger, well, that governor was certainly not going to call a special session to make all of this happen, and Democrats didn't have the control of the two-thirds of both chambers to do it themselves. But Democratic leaders announced that they were going to convene a special session anyway. Really? How could they do that? Well, they were reconvening. Not just convening, but reconvening a special session that they said had never actually formally been closed from years earlier. I think it was 2023 or 2024.
Oh, they found a loophole to exploit? Very Republican of them.
I know, right? And of course, Republicans, they hooted and hollered and they screamed and declared it unconstitutional. But like I said, in a very Republican-y way, with narrow majority control of the gavel in both chambers, Democrats reconvened their special session from 2 years earlier. And yes, they passed the first of the two legislative votes that would be required to put a constitutional amendment before the people. And then a few weeks later, literally just a few weeks, they were apparently rewarded for having done so bigly when they ended up flipping 13 seats in the State General Assembly from red to blue in the House of Delegates, which is a huge number to flip in a single election in this very, very, very purple state. They also won the governorship, taking it back from Republicans. Voters did not punish Democrats for playing hardball. They thanked them for it. They thanked them for pushing back against Republican hardball, such as we saw just a few months earlier last summer when Texas Republicans actually threatened to arrest Democrats who refused to show up for a special session down there where Republicans were voting to rewrite their map. Not to hold a special election to allow voters to decide, but to rewrite the map themselves using their already gerrymandered Republican majority in the Texas state legislature. Democrats tried to prevent a quorum. They had to leave the state. They left their houses. They left their real jobs because it's just a part-time legislature in Texas. And Republicans threatened those Democrats with arrest. They eventually had to call a second special session, and finally they were able to ram through this change that would steal five seats from Democrats in Texas, or so they thought. So when Democrats in Virginia played hardball in return in response to that, well, voters thanked them for it last November. They flipped more than they flipped 13 more seats to the Democrats. Shortly after the first of the year, when the new General Assembly convened in Virginia, one of the first orders of business was then to have that second constitutionally required vote in the Assembly to put the amendment onto the special election ballot, to put the matter up to the people of Virginia, the voters, as to whether they wanted to temporarily set aside Virginia's U.S. House map drawn by the Independent Commission until after 2030. It would not be a decision by the legislature, as we saw in all of the Republican states that have done this so far, in Texas, in Missouri, where, by the way, that map, I think, is still being challenged, and opponents hope to put it on hold to let the people decide about that gerrymander this November instead, and in the very, very evenly divided state of North Carolina, where almost every statewide office is now held by a Democrat. Nonetheless, the state legislature there is so gerrymandered in favor of Republicans after years of GOP control that they just rammed through this new House map to pick up another seat for Republicans this year, or at least that's what they hope. But Virginia, as in California last year, well, they let the voters decide on this instead. And after a grueling, incredibly expensive campaign on both sides, wherein Republicans tried to trick and confuse voters about whether to vote yes to temporarily redraw the map or no to leave it as is, finally, on Tuesday of this week, it was, in fact, Election Day. And Virginia voters approved a mid-decade redistricting plan on Tuesday that could boost Democrats' chance of winning four additional U.S. House seats in November in the midterm elections that will decide ultimately control of the closely divided Congress and perhaps the fate of one Donald J. Trump, at least as of his agenda. The constitutional amendment was narrowly backed by voters on Tuesday by only about 3 points, 51.5 to 48.5, pretty close. And it bypasses a bipartisan redistricting commission to allow the use of new districts drawn by Virginia's Democratic-led General Assembly. That all happened the day after Donald Trump, who, remember, forced Texas lawmakers and those in other Republican-controlled states to rewrite their maps, which Democrats have been scrambling to have voters respond to at the ballot box instead, to rewrite the maps in states that they control, that Donald Trump actually had the temerity to go on, I don't know what show he was on.
Right-wing podcaster.
Some podcaster. The night before the election, I believe, he was trying to rally his supporters to vote against the referendum by saying this.
This referendum is a blatant partisan power grab that nobody's really ever seen anything like it.
Nobody's ever seen anything like it, what they're doing in Virginia. By holding two votes of the legislature in two different sessions and then putting it before the people. The chutzpah of this guy. To say this is a blatant partisan power grab that nobody's ever seen anything like it. Are you kidding me? When this was actually voters responding in the final part of a three-step process in a state that had previously preferred bipartisan drawn maps, but had to do this because Donald Trump threatened Texas Republicans if they did not redraw the maps to advantage Republicans. Does he think we all arrived here on planet Earth this week? Does he think we are that stupid? Or does he just think that his supporters are that stupid? Republicans spent millions of dollars in the bargain trying to confuse Virginia voters about all of this. They put ads on TV showing Barack Obama speaking against gerrymandering with the message that Obama believes you should vote no, as if that's what Obama was endorsing, even though Obama had, in fact, endorsed the yes effort and cut his own video telling people to vote yes. But Obama, you know, like myself, has been an opponent of gerrymandering, and so am I. But I'm not a proponent of standing by and doing nothing amid an attempted authoritarian takeover of our 250-year-old small D democratic flaws and all system of governance. I stand with folks like Virginia State Senator Louise Lucas, who was rallying folks to support yes on Tuesday.
We didn't ask for this mess, but we're going to finish this mess. So I'm being real kind with my words today. Okay. They started, we'll finish it. We would not be in this place if it had not been for Donald Trump and his shenanigans and trying to get what he called five new seats that he was entitled to. He ain't entitled to. He isn't entitled to anything. And what we are saying is that in order for us to try to level the playing field, Virginia is going to play a pivotal role.
So, yeah, he actually said that they needed to rewrite the seats in the districts in Texas because Republicans were entitled to five more seats. So, yeah, you got to push back. And so Democrats did so, and Virginia voters joined them on Tuesday, and Republicans are furious about it all today, even as they ignore why it is that we are all in this mess to begin with. In a statement issued by Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries on Tuesday night, he said, quote, last July, Donald Trump demanded that Texas draw five new Republican seats in the middle of a decade, igniting a chain reaction of corrupt MAGA state legislators attempting to rig the midterm elections. While many expected Democrats to roll over and play dead, we did the opposite. Democrats did not step back, he said. We fought back. When they go low, we hit back hard. He notes that this is not over. He said next week Ron DeSantis is hauling the Florida legislature back into a special session to redraw maps because Republicans know they are on the verge of an epic defeat in November. He said Governor DeSantis is clearly more interested in illegal gerrymandering, I'll get to that in a moment, than lowering the cost of living or fixing our broken healthcare system. Right now, nearly 5 million Floridians are facing higher premiums because Republicans failed to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits. If Florida Republicans proceed with this illegal scheme, says Jeffries, they will only create more prime pickup opportunities for Democrats, just as they did with Trump's dummy mander, I'll explain that in a second too, in Texas. He then went on to aggressively target, and he listed about 8 Republican members of Congress from Florida, saying, "We are prepared to take them all on. We are prepared to win. Maximum warfare everywhere, all the time." Does not sound like a Democrat, but that's that was Hakeem Jeffries. Now, all those folks, folks that he named that he believes will be more vulnerable if Florida so-called dummy-manders the state next week, which he is claiming that they have already done in Texas. Specifically, that means a gerrymander that may create more Republican seats on paper. But to do that, they need to weaken their grip on other strong Republican districts, which in a wave election like Democrats hope to see this November could actually end up losing seats for Republicans in some of those districts that they thought were strong ones that they could hold on to easily. We will see. That is what they call dummy mandering.
Yes, they weaken and erode the Republican strongholds.
As to what he says Florida is planning to do, describing it as illegal, well, Democrats are charging that the Florida state constitution bars mid-decade redistricting. We'll see how they do on that challenge, given the very Republican partisan makeup of the Florida Supreme Court. And at the same time, it should be noted that as great as the effort was by Virginia Democrats to rewrite their House maps there to pick up as many as 4 seats for Democrats, changing the state delegation from its current 6-5 Democratic majority to an 10-1 majority next year. Well, we will see. The special election and the redistricting itself is still under challenge in Virginia state courts and could ultimately, almost certainly, will be ultimately decided by the Supreme Court there. So don't get too excited yet about any of this. As of now, Trump's efforts, has been largely a wash for the most part. And we'll see. Florida could end up flipping another 4 or 5 seats to Republicans. The election could be tossed out from Virginia. So we'll see. The mess is not over. But it's very nice to see Democrats pushing back for a change, proving that voters will come out to support them when they do. All right, let's take a screeching turn here of sorts to Social Security, where advocates are now trying to sound the alarm about what Trump and Elon Musk and the Doge Bros have done with your data. Told you we were taking a turn, as one of the bros supposedly has the entire highly guarded database of Social Security recipients and their data from the past 90 years on a single thumb drive. And he's said to be offering it to share with his next employer. What? Yes. And it's even worse than that. Nancy Altman of Social Security Works joins us next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
Yeah. You know, I didn't realize they were talking about a Doge Bro in that song. Like the one who stole the entire Social Security database on a thumb drive. Anyway, welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. With all of the other madness going on a daily basis right now, and really over the past year on a daily basis, here is a story that has been allowed to fly too far under the radar, it seems to me, which really eventually needs more eyeballs. Back when Donald Trump was inaugurated for his second term in late January of last year, he tapped a woman named Michelle King, a nonpartisan, very experienced career civil servant, to be the acting commissioner of the Social Security Administration. After all, Trump had long vowed throughout his campaigns not to touch or harm Social Security in any way, and King's longtime service as a 30-year nonpartisan career SSA staffer was a great relief to Social Security advocates and watchdogs. That relief, however, would be short-lived. Just weeks later, in mid-February, King was pushed out of that job by the administration after she steadfastly refused to provide access to the agency's main Social Security database to Elon Musk and his Doge bros, who were demanding access. That database, of course, includes incredibly sensitive data on the more than 70 million people, including retirees, disabled people, and children who currently receive benefits from the agency. When King, after 30 years of service at SSA, declined to hand over all of that sensitive data, well, Trump removed her. He would then skip over 120 more experienced, more senior employees to name her replacement as acting chief. A guy named Leland Dudek, a mid-level employee who was actually on administrative leave at that time, was named to the role. Why was he on administrative leave? Well, because he was found to have provided data to Musk and the Doge bros to your private Social Security data. So naturally, the Trump administration elevated him to run the entire agency as acting commissioner. Dudek would then be replaced a few months later in March last year by a permanent commissioner confirmed by the Senate on a party line vote, a guy by the name of Frank Bisignano, who would also go on to be named by Secretary of the Treasury Scott Bessent last October as CEO of the Internal Revenue Service, a position that has never actually existed before. Well, that also riled Social Security advocates who complained that the SSA administrator has never, in the nearly 90-year history of the agency, held a second job while overseeing the nation's critical Social Security safety net. And now let's roll the clock forward to the end of this past January, a year since Trump had taken office again, and nearly a year since the last qualified chief of SSA was run out on a rail for refusing to share sensitive data with Trump administration operatives. Alex Lawson, executive director of the nonprofit watchdog named Social Security Works, issued a statement reading, quote, "Nearly a year ago, Elon Musk's Doge forced out Social Security acting commissioner after she refused to hand over the American people's private Social Security data. Unions and advocates quickly filed a lawsuit to bar Doge from accessing that data, but the U.S. Supreme Court issued a preliminary injunction restoring Doge's access. Now, said Lawson, we are beginning to learn what Doge is doing with it. New court filings related to the lawsuit, he explained, reveal that Doge operatives entered an agreement with a political advocacy group to share private Social Security data with the goal of overturning election results in several states. The filings do not reveal the identity of either the Doge operatives or the advocacy group in question. But thanks to Donald Trump and the Supreme Court, Elon Musk's Doge minions have access to our private Social Security data. So does anyone that they choose to share it with, and anyone who can hack the unsecured server they've stored it on, writes Lawson. Yes, back in September of last year, SSA's chief data officer resigned in protest after filing a whistleblower lawsuit charging that Trump's and Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency had put the sensitive personal information of millions of Americans at risk by sharing it to an unsecured server. Charles Borges said in his resignation that he was leaving his position, quote, involuntarily, unquote, doing so in part because of concerns that the agency's data is being handled improperly. And his efforts to correct the problems were rebuffed, writing to the SSA chief Bisignano, quote, due to my concerns regarding SSA's questionable and potentially unlawful data management practices and the inability to exercise my statutory duties, I believe my position is untenable and that this constitutes an intolerable working environment for a chief executive. The pieces, all too quietly and arguably all too slowly, seem to be coming together. Lawson writes, we need to know exactly who has our data and what they are doing with it. In his January statement, he added, and those who have committed legal acts must be prosecuted. Republicans, he said, in Congress love to claim that they support Social Security. Now is their chance to prove it by launching a long overdue investigation into just what DOGE is doing with our earned benefits and our private data. Earlier this month, the Social Security Works president, Nancy Altman, writing at The Hill, observed, Social Security holds data on over 500 million Americans living and dead. Federal law restricts its use to one single mission, ensuring you receive the benefits you've earned. Not to deport your neighbor, not to enrich Elon Musk and train his AI, and not to keep you from exercising your constitutional right to vote. Americans have entrusted their personal data to the Social Security Administration with the understanding that it will be carefully guarded, accessed only by those who need it, to ensure we received our earned benefits. The confidentiality and security of that data has been one of the highest importance, to the Social Security Administration for its entire history, Altman writes. To this day, she notes, every single Social Security Administration employee and contractor must complete privacy and security awareness training every single year. The privacy and security of your data that you have entrusted to the Social Security Administration was carefully safeguarded by every president, Republican and Democratic alike, until Donald Trump. Joining us now is Nancy Altman, co-founder and president of Social Security Works, chair of the Strengthened Social Security Coalition, and a member of the Social Security Advisory Board, a bipartisan independent federal government agency. She's also the author of a number of books on Social Security and most recently co-authored Social Security Works for Everyone, Protecting and Expanding the Insurance Americans Love and Count On, written with her co-founder, Eric Kingson. Nancy Altman, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that wonderful focus on what is going on at the Social Security Administration.
Well, it is very difficult to focus on it right now, of course, with everything going on. This has been a sort of a long and winding story unfolding over the past year or so with seemingly dire implications, but not with nearly enough sunlight and media attention, which I guess we can chalk up to all of the other storms caused daily by the guy in the White House and his disastrous, chaotic administration. But you suggest in your piece at The Hill that what we are actually witnessing here, whether we notice it or not, trying to witness, amounts to, quote, the greatest data theft in history. How so, as you see it?
It's really scary and outrageous what's going on. Steve Bannon talks about flooding the zone, and this is intentional. They do not want attention brought to this, but it is outrageous what's going on. As you said in your introduction, they have the most sensitive of all our information. They have all of our Social Security numbers. They have our spouse's name and Social Security numbers, our children's names and Social Security numbers. If we've even just applied for disability benefits, much less gotten them, they have our medical records. They have so much. They have if we get divorced, we have all kinds of information. It is a scammer's treasure trove, and it is very, very serious. I think one point that's important to know, you know who's in charge of the Social Security Administration at the Trump White House? Stephen Miller. So he clearly wants it for immigration. And he has been telling field offices that when because of course, people who are here legally have green cards, of course, are working. They have Social Security numbers. They can't vote, but they have Social Security numbers. So he's talking about when they come in, let Homeland Security know. It's this effort to intimidate. It's to they're talking about suppressing voting and using our information to do that. And Elon Musk, I'm sure, is trying to monetize all of our information. But beyond that, it's been very securely held. Mm-hmm. And now it's in some cloud. Who knows who has access to it and who can just can hack into it. And then we're all in danger of being scammed.
There was early on, and you know, it was this got a lot of coverage at the time. We haven't talked about it lately, but there was, you know, Donald Trump, I think himself was making the claim along with Musk that they discovered millions of people who were 122 years old or something like that, who were, well, they implied that they were receiving Social Security benefits, suggesting that money was still going out to dead people, essentially. Was there any evidence to support any of those claims at the time?
Oh, my gosh. That is another outrage. And I know on this radio station we can't use curse words, but I'd like to for this one, because it is the Social Security Administration. Actually, the concern is that they are so diligent about making sure that people who have deceased don't get benefits, that occasionally you find people who were marked as deceased when they're not, and that can create all kinds of problems. You lose your health insurance, you lose everything. The reality is that the Social Security Administration has for many years paid money to state vital services offices, so they know instantly when somebody's deceased, and when that happens, they instantly end the benefits. It is just, again, the opponents of Social Security know that even their own voters, they are a fringe, that even MAGA voters really value Social Security, believe it's more important than ever, don't want to see it cut. So what do you do when the whole country feels that way and you want to get rid of it? You undermine confidence. You tell people, oh, it's all, you know, there are all these, they'll tell old people that there are people who aren't really disabled who are claiming the benefits. Mm-hmm. They'll tell children they're never going to see their benefits. And they tell the American people, there are all these dead people getting benefits. There is zero. That is such a lie.
Were they essentially lying about the data at the time, or did they just not know how to read it? Do we have any sense of what they were even referring to there?
Well, they certainly, whether it was incompetence or intentional, the answer is there's no truth to it. What happens is that Social Security does not add a penny to the deficit. We contribute tax workers. Contribute from every paycheck. Their employers match their contributions dollar for dollar. That money is dedicated. It can only be used for Social Security and associated administrative costs. So it doesn't pay a penny to the deficit, add a penny to the deficit, and it doesn't do things that are, unless it's required by Congress, that aren't towards that mission. Mm-hmm. So you can find someone who you know, was 10 years old and had a Social Security number and passed away, but had no earnings record and so forth. They don't worry about cleaning it up and making sure, you know, making sure that person died and somehow doing something. So you can find people in what's called the numident, the list of everybody's numbers, people who were born a long time ago, but they never received benefits. Mm-hmm. It's clear that there's nothing. So I think they were looking at those kinds of things. Mm. And again, either they just didn't bother to ask a question, or they thought, oh, this is good. We can undermine confidence with this. But to have have Elon Musk, the wealthiest man in the world, and Donald Trump, who at his State of the Union, when everybody's watching, that kind of a platform, just spew these lies without even asking anybody who's expert whether there's anything to that. As I say, whether it's incompetence or just intention to undermine confidence, because he says he's not going to cut Social Security, but he called it a Ponzi scheme before he ran for office. There's no question that, and in his first term, he proposed cuts to Social Security, but Congress didn't go along with them.
Well, all of which makes, you know, these whistleblower cases and these watchdog challenges to what they're doing all the more important. I mentioned during my intro that it was discovered, or at least alleged via this one of the whistleblower lawsuits here, that one of the Doge bros was actually sharing this information received from Social Security with a political advocacy group. It was not the group was not named, but that some of the Doge bros had agreed to share this data with them. Do we know who that group was and what they had hoped to use to share that data for?
We actually do now. And in fact, the interesting thing, just as a little bit of background, so as soon as, you know, you mentioned the acting commissioner, Michelle King, who is, you know, very polite, very soft-spoken, very cooperative, served in Republican and Democratic administrations. I've known her for a long time. I had no idea what her politics was. And I'm confident that when Doge wanted the information, she didn't just say no. She said, well, what do you want it for? Maybe we can figure out a way that you can have some of it, not all of it. No, that wasn't good enough for it. They wanted access to everything. And when she tried to work with them to narrow their request, she found out by email, okay, you're no longer commissioner. I mean, it was really outrageous. And so immediately, lawsuits were filed by those representing American workers. And there were preliminary injunctions put in place, temporary restraining orders, so Doge could not get access to it. But the Supreme Court, you know, which I'm concerned now are just Trump supporters in robes, went ahead and lifted that, so Doge had full access to it. And then as the lawsuit went on, the Department of Justice had to admit, and they had to because lawyers who lie to the court and are found to lie to the court are disbarred. So they reluctantly admitted that there was this access. They had taken this information, and we now know it was a election denial group that is all in on voter suppression. But that's the tip of the iceberg. That's what they had to acknowledge. I'm concerned that a lot more groups have this information now. But that group was interested in it because they wanted to harass people and try to make sure, as I say, suppress the vote, compare them to voter rolls and so forth.
I'm just taking a crazy guess. Is that group the Truth the Vote group down in Texas?
I think it is. I think that's right.
I blocked
the name, but I think that's right.
Yeah.
But it certainly was, if it wasn't that group, it was one just like it. But I think that was the group.
Okay.
And of course,
for folks who don't know, they're the ones who made the entirely discredited supposed documentary called A Thousand Mules, whatever the hell it was.
Yes.
They've been discredited for years in the election integrity space, making up claims about voter fraud, constantly stepping on a rake. And, you know, after their data is found to be false or made up or anything else. So, yeah, when I originally saw that report that they had shared it with some election group, I just kind of had a feeling it would be True the Vote. We don't know that for sure. But it sure sounds like the sort of thing they would do.
Exactly. And one of the ways that they can misuse it is that, as I say, if you're here on a green card, a documented worker that's been here for many years, and your records are at the Social Security Administration, if you then become a naturalized citizen, that's not mission-driven for the Social Security Administration. That's often not noted They don't, the Social Security Administration doesn't go out of its way to find out that information and make the change, because that doesn't affect your Social Security benefits, mm-hmm. whether you're, yet what that means is that the voter suppression group can say, wait, this person's on a voter roll, but they're not a citizen, mm-hmm. when of course they are a citizen, mm-hmm. and then they hassle them and they have to prove it. And, you know, you can imagine in this day of ICE, how that can really lead to just terrible outcomes, and people who legally can vote and want to vote and should be able to vote, but are being intimidated and harassed out of voting. And that's just the tiny tip. There can be all kinds, as they say, if Elon Musk wants to make money off of our data, yeah. well, this is the best data you can get.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, a scammer's treasure trove. Yeah. And one of the, I mentioned at the top of the segment, there was one of these Doge guys had reportedly copied like the entire database to a personal yes. thumb drive, was offering yes. to share it with his next employer. I mean, has there ever been any sort of leak of Social Security data?
No.
In the agency's 90-year history, much less everything on a thumb drive.
As you said in your introduction, the Social Security Administration, from the very beginning, they understand how sensitive this data is, and that the American people are providing it under the understanding that the only use of it will be Social Security. In fact, the very first regulation in 1937, the predecessor to the Social Security Administration commissioner issued, was about privacy. That's how important this was, that they are so concerned. And there's, when you're, before you start working at the Social Security Administration, you're trained in the privacy and what you can look at and what you can't and what you can do with the data. It's always very closely held. It's very carefully done. But once Doge came in, they were taking it off campus. They were looking at it. Nobody knows who was looking over their shoulder. In fact, I don't know if this is accurate, but it sent chills on my spine when a Social Security Administration employee that I know worked there for decades said that every year, you know, the Social Security Administration, the data is audited. They will never again get a clean audit because there's no way to know what Doge has done. Mm. They had access to all kinds of things. They could have changed any kind of thing. And in fact, one of the real outrages was where they were at one point taking people that they knew were living, who were here legally, but were on green cards, mm-hmm. and marking them as dead. And that, as I say, is, there are stories where people who are inadvertently marked as dead, who die months later because it's so stressful and so hard to get it changed. Wow. And you can imagine, all of a sudden you can't access your any of your credit cards, your bank account, you have no health insurance, your employer is everything.
Yeah.
You're no longer, and you are. And there are horror stories about people trying to clear that up.
Trying to prove that they're alive. I remember we covered a few of those stories last year where these, I mean, it's already difficult enough to deal with Social Security Administration, to get appointments yep. with them, to get into the offices. I know they were talking about closing down a lot of the offices.
Yep.
And people were, you know, just trying to get in to say, and, you know, these are a lot of older folks are in there yep. trying
people,
to say, I'm alive.
And people with disabilities.
Yep.
And so you've got, It's horrendous when it's inadvertent. Can you imagine them doing it maliciously, intentionally, when they know you're not dead, but we're just going to create trouble for you and mark you as that? So their view was, you know, you can self-deport, even though they're here legally. It is this. I'm so glad you're covering the story because, as you say, with the flood the zone and everything that's going on, it is so hard for reporters. It's even hard for the experts, although we're, you know, laser focused on Social Security, to really know everything that's going on. But it is so important for the American people to know because they should be on high alert for scams.
Yeah, well, that's another question. I mean, because I'm wondering, you know, is there any way at this point to put the genie back into the bottle now that it's escaped into the wild? I don't know that there is, given my own knowledge about how this data works. I mean, you know, raising the question, you know, are we all going to have to get new Social Security numbers at some point that are new and secured? Given that they're all out there, I mean, anything can be done. I don't think I'm exaggerating. Anything can be done with these numbers once people have access to your Social Security, your birth date, your address, and everything else.
We are in uncharted territory.
Yeah.
And it is, and again, personal data, your medical records, all kinds of things. And the other thing is, the reason the scams can work so well is because it'll sound like they know who you are. On the other hand, the Social Security Administration sometimes does have to contact you. So these Social Security, is such an important program for Americans. About a third of seniors rely on Social Security for virtually all of their income, and around two thirds for half or more of their income. So you can imagine if you get a call saying, give us this information or you'll lose your benefits, your inclination is going to do it. In fact, when, again, in their brilliance, the Trump administration, early in the administration, the second term, said that you could no longer change your bank routing number. That's the other thing they have. They have all your bank information.
Yes.
And that you can't change your bank routing number over the phone. You have to come in person. A lot of people misunderstood that for good reason, because usually those kinds of changes, this change made no sense and they reversed it. But they take months or years if they're going to do a huge change to make sure the public understands. But this was just kind of announced to the general public over at the same time the staff was told. And a lot of people did think that they had to come in and prove who they were, even though that wasn't the case. And in fact, the Social Security Administration was informed that people would bring in letters from scammers that looked official saying, I'm supposed to provide all this information. Is this right? And of course, they said no. But you can imagine for every person who understood it was a scam or at least looked into it, there were probably five others who just gave over the information.
Yeah. It's horrifying. And this would seem to be one of, if not the greatest data thefts in U.S., perhaps world history, as you describe it.
Yes.
Given that, beyond whistleblower lawsuits, are any of these matters under some sort of criminal investigation at this point by either the, Inspector General, Trump's own Department of Justice, which seems unlikely, or at the very least by Congress, where there are still at least some Republicans, I think, who at least claim to be concerned about Social Security, itself. Is there any process being moving forward here other than these whistleblower lawsuits?
Here is the outrage. The answer is no. But the Democrats in Congress have been pushing their Republican colleagues to hold hearings and to get to the bottom of this and to bring in the commissioner and have him explain what's going on and provide lots of information. But the Republicans are a rubber stamp for Donald Trump and the Trump administration. So one of the important points about this next election is Democrats don't have the gavel. So they don't set the priorities. They can't hold a hearing. They can't bring in the commissioner and so forth. That if the Democrats win at least the House of Representatives, they can then hold oversight hearings. And that is essential. As we keep saying, the horse is out of the barn, but it's still running around. And it's important to find out what has happened, what the dangers are, what the risks are, and what can be done to at least ameliorate it. At this point, you don't have the Department of Justice or the FBI or any of them looking into it. One of the first things Trump did when he came to office was fire the Inspector General, who's the one who's supposed to look at this kind of stuff. Mm. There is an acting, but you can see by the reports that come out that they're being very careful because they want to keep their job. And you've got Congress doing nothing, and you have a Supreme Court that seems to be willing to do just about anything Trump wants. So next January, if the Democrats are able to take the House, they 100% will have hearings on it because they've been railing about it and they've been sending letters, but the letters have basically been ignored and they don't have power to find out, to really get to the bottom of what's going on, who has this data, what they've done with it, where it is now, and what, if anything, the Social Security Administration is doing to protect the data from further disclosure.
I was, I'm out of time here, Nancy, but, and I think you may have just answered this question. My last question was going to be what it is that we, the people, can do to push back against all of this and try to correct it, unless it's just, you know, too late at this point. What can we do?
I think it's really, really important that the Democrats win at least the House of Representatives. You know, we also have the trustees report, which projects out on the solvency of Social Security, will be coming out soon. And the Democrats have a plan to expand benefits and require the wealthiest to pay their fair share. They also have been pushing repeatedly and endlessly to get their colleagues to look into what's happening with DOGE, what's happening with offices, what's happening with pushing out the most experienced people. So much that's going on that's harmful to our ability to access benefits. So it's very important, if you care about Social Security, to vote, and not just vote. Every politician will say they love Social Security, but ask them if the Republican, ask them why they haven't had oversight hearings. Mm. Will they have oversight hearings? And if they're a Democrat, ask them the same thing, and will they expand benefits and require the wealthy to pay their fair share? I'm told that if the Democrats win, there will be legislation in the first 100 days, and there definitely will be hearings.
Expand Social Security. There's an idea. Nancy Altman is co-founder and president of Social Security Works. She is the co-author of Social Security Works for Everyone, Protecting and Expanding the Insurance Americans Love and Count On. You can follow her work and their work at socialsecurityworks.org. They are on Blue Sky under that same name. Nancy, really appreciate you joining us today. We will link to your piece over at The Hill, headlined Elon Musk's Doge Stole Your Social Security Data. Thank you for sounding that alarm, Nancy. Look forward to speaking to you next time.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. All right, we got to get out. We are running very late. We're going to have to catch up tomorrow with the war news. Lots of war news going on. The Secretary of the Navy has quit. Okay, we'll try to make sense of that on our next thrilling broadcast. Until then, my thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free at bradblog.com. Please hit a donate button while you are there. Drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias at The Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you here. Hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.